session number 22353, Reel 8.
Well, that's on Reel 8.
We got round the top end of there, unless we pass somebody had put two stakes and a line and washing on it, and a big poster on the bottom one said, "This is a seafood line, and here is the washing," because of the song that was going around at that time. People hang out the washing on the sea free line, and I saw it. So we went on, and then we there was a retaliation by the Germans, of course, when they flooded the area. And this was rather difficult for us, because we had followed up, we were near up with the infantry, and this flooded area created a problem. And we found ourselves marooned on a little mound, because there aren't any high spots really in Holland. And we had a sort of a row of six cottages where we had loads of wounded people, some very serious, and then we couldn't do anything with them. So we had some 5 days stuck there with all this water around us, and nowhere to send on these serious people. I had a particularly difficult case there with an officer who had received a gunshot wound, is the mildest way of putting it, on his stomach, and he was there with all his stomach ripped open, and all the inner workings of the body could be well seen operating. And so I said that I would look after this chap, continually, which I did, 24 hours of the day, and I stayed with him and keep cleaning him up and treating him with MMB powder on his intestines, and he was still alive, and I was very pleased about that. When the ducks came and took us off,
did he suffer very much?
I haven't heard anything more of him at all. But obviously, he was in a difficult situation. It required a real skin grafting and things like that to get him back, but I hope that he got right. But anyway, I did all I could for him, and for days I stuck with him.
I mean, did he suffer very much whilst he was with you?
No, he didn't. When we had, obviously, he had morphine, but apart from that, he was quite happy to be so treated, etc. So we went on then to, I mean, got onto dry land, and the problem was resolved, of course, and so we went on to a place called Kalkar, because this was all grouping together then in order to, for the push into over the Rhine. And we managed to get to this place at Kalkar, and there the Canadians had had a wild attempt to rush the Rhine on their own, which is typical of the Canadians. Unfortunately, they lost a lot of men, and my memory of that is that I saw a field in which all these thousands, I should imagine, a couple of thousand of pit bodies were lined up right across in many lines of rows of bodies lying on the field. A very sad sight, really. Anyway, one of the, whilst we were at Kalkar, we also had this school, which was filled with all sorts of rubbish, including the bicycle. a motorized cycle. And so, like everybody else, also all people, we tried to get this cycle, put the cycle together, and to get it going. In fact, as we fired it, as we sort of kick start to get it going, every time we did that, we had a shell. So it was obvious that they got radio, radio waves onto this, onto anything that was moving or mechanical that was enabled to then to get a pinpoint. And unfortunately, we got the shell over onto us, and but it didn't, nothing was anywhere particularly near to give us any trouble. But the colonel came out and said, "If you're going to play with that thing, go and play with it somewhere else, because we don't like the idea of being shelled by our own misdemeanors, as it were." But anyway, that was that, and eventually we went over at Basel, and we followed behind the Somersets as normal, Somersets and the 4th and 5th Wilts, which was 129 Brigade. And we got the other side safely, as it were. And
were you under fire?
Yes, but the ahead of us was the, was of course the tanks had got over, and they did this break in and break out. The break in were the tanks, and behind them were the infantry who did the breaking out operation, which was to spread the bridgehead. And we didn't get, we weren't disturbed too much as far as the fire was concerned. We've now got used to fire, and in our usual situation, as whether they once they got sorted, then we would get this counter battery fire, and that would always be going over the top of us. But that happened from the day one, and by that time you get a bit blasé. So as long as the shells kept going over, you didn't do much thinking about it. But it was only when the shell was a bit dodgy, then it would cause you to bob down a bit and hope that it was not going to fall onto the area around where you were. But we went on, and eventually we got to a place called Cleve. And here we had an inn, as it were, and a stamina, I think he said, where they had very large rooms, very large rooms in which we took to set up as our reception area, and also then we had another room for doing our operating on the various people as they came in. We had these two tables set up. And so we, and then there was various other rooms where they were able to await evacuation back to FDS, etc. But there we were quite busy, because once again the main lot of fighting was in front of us. They were trying to get spread out and make this bridgehead quite forward. A lot of tanks got brewed up in that area, and it was a great shame. The reason our tanks got sort of was sorted out in this particular way was because their bellies were soft bellies, whereas the Russians, their tanks had thick armor plating underneath, and they could stand a lot of trouble, a lot of explosives underneath them, but our tanks couldn't.
Is that the German tanks, or the Russian tanks?
the Russian tanks could stand it, but the panzers, of course, they were the ones that caused us the greater trouble, because they swept down on them, then they got the firepower, and were very, very devastating. But in the main, we got away with it. We saw various vehicles. It had a shell which went right through from the front right to the back. And brain gun carriers were particularly prone to that sort of treatment. And anyway, we got set up. We were set up in this place at Cleve, and so it went on, and everything worked very well. One thing I remember, particularly, we went down in the cellars to sit in to have a sleep. When it was our turn off, when we were off, and to get a this was time of great booby trapping. A lot of people got damaged by the fact that they went down these cellars, and they would find the place just as it had been left, and you could go down some steps. Now, they would place things like radios and other tempting things on these steps, and as you went down, you would trip over a tripwire, and that was would be the end. But one went round with these things with a stick, trying to make sure there were no wires around the radio or whatever it was on the steps. And in the end, we decided that we would keep ourselves to ourselves. And so we had this cellar in which we spent our time off in this particular place. And otherwise, it was just work and sleep and work and etc. And whilst the war progressed further, the front progressed further on. And I remember that on one occasion, I didn't have to go into where the people with stretcher cases were waiting to be evacuated further back. But on this occasion, I did. It's strange that these things happen. And so I went in, and I saw, of course, these greatcoats were always used as blankets, as it were. And they always had to, when they left us, they were over. They left folded over them. So these are the casualties, that is. And they kept them warm until they got to a better place. And anyway, went in, and there was one, and the stretchers were quite tight together, and on the roll in a row on the floor. And these stretchers were tight together, you could hardly get a finger in between them. And there was one man without his greatcoat over him. I asked what it was all about, and they said, "We can't get it out from under him." And I said, "Well, why don't you make sure you can get it under him?" Well, we've tried, but and so it was obvious that if anybody was going to do this, I better do it myself. And in the corner was a huge German stove, and that was warm, very hot, in fact. And I decided that I'd better do something about getting this man covered up. And lo and behold, he couldn't move his greatcoat, because he was lying on it underneath. It was trapped underneath the stretcher. And so I eased up. I said, "No, just ease this up while I get try and get my foot in, or get somewhere into." And I think I mainly knelt on the stretcher next to it, and I felt underneath and tried to feel where the problem was. And lo and behold, there was a solid piece of whatever, and it was in his pocket. So then it was a question of getting this, get my hand into his pocket, and so in order to release what it was, to take something out of the pocket. To my horror, it was a grenade. And And then the next thing, of course, was to ensure that this grenade was safe. This was not unusual for infantrymen to carry grenades in their pockets. And as they went into the front, they carried everything, I think, that was likely to create an explosion for the opposite side. But here was this man, and I was getting very hot, and there's no way in which he could move himself. So I said to the others, well, lift up the stretcher very, very carefully, sort of little bit, very, very tiny bit at a time, while I try and get my hand round this, and so I can make sure that the pin's in position. And so eventually, of course, I was able to withdraw it, and with this firmly in my hand, the first person I saw, if it was Ivor, I said, Ivor, get hold of that, take it outside, and throw it as far as you can. So, and that was the an incident which I always remember about Cleve, and its situation there. And Cleve went. We went from Cleve then. Virtually, I suppose it was. They were collapsed. The opposition was collapsing by this time. It was moving very fast, and so we arrived in the Bremen, Bremenhaven, was where we then got ourselves. But en route, we had we came across some very high fence and what was appeared to be buildings of a barrack type, but not the wooden type of buildings. And we stopped outside this gates, and the infantry went in. They were and got out the gates, and this was Brent. This was this was the a concentration camp. Oh dear, can you tell that one? I think about it. It was Belsen, and it was. And now the people were coming and clawing at this wire fence, trying to get to us, as it were. And they were in their stripes, in their striped uniform, as it were. And what a sad sight they were. Almost like skeletons they were. And it was a chance as to whether we went into Belsen, and we were only about five vehicles short of the gates, and or whether the 130 field ambulance went in there. It was decided, because the 130 field ambulance had had a very nasty session before at Caen, that they would they stripped us of all our surplus gear and gave it to the 130, and the 130 went in and stayed there. And we went on with these photographs now issued to us. How they managed to get them to us so quickly, they had these large photographs of people in Belsen, the examples of what was being done, with the instruction that we were to show the general public, as and when we found them, that this was going on. But nobody would believe that this was anything at all to do with them. My friend Max Bullock, who was a captain in the 4th Samurai, he was the one who broke the gate down, really. And of course, our chaps, once they, the infantry that is, once they got inside, they tried to make short work of the guards, etc. And they were withdrawn, and we went up towards further into Germany, and as I say, we arrived at Bremenhaven.
Did the 4th SOI people manage to catch, do anything to the crowd?
I think they shot quite a few, but the main people, no, they didn't. They were eventually caught. Irma Grace, I think, don't know which one, and the Bormann, her assistant, were later taken to trial. And we went up to this main street in, we roll into Bremenhaven. They just liberated a prisoner of war camp where all the British, quite a lot of British people were there, and without any more to do, they turned us round as a unit, and without any stopping or any celebration whatsoever, we were on our way south again, and we went to a place called Utzer in just outside Hanover, and there was a row of shops which had a large continuous area above, which we used as a cottage hospital, and that because now the fighting was over, obviously. We were in the non-frap period. And we were, two or three of us were assigned to this cottage hospital to run it, and the rest of the unit went on repatriation trains taking Russians back into Russia. That's the Russian soldiers. So we were in this situation. We had 30 or 40 beds to look after. The information was that we had to make a request, or any request, to the local burgomaster, that was through our RSM, and he would then give somebody, of the civilians, the instruction to provide for us what we wanted. Well, naturally, we couldn't think of anything, probably an egg or two or something of this nature. So anyway, this was carried out. We gave the request in, and it was all done. And then, so the next day, up comes a very military step up. There were concrete steps, I remember, up to this first floor, and there was a little girl who, with a very large square bag, which contained the necessary bits that we had requested, and she, very stiff and very military-like, she brought it up and clicked her heels together, handed this bag, with a straight arm, which we took over, and she remained where she was while we took it into the little dispensary we had, emptied the bag went back and so handed it back to this girl in a very not sloppy manner, but a softer manner, and she, within a very military way, again sort of took the bag with a stiff arm and marched down the steps in just the same way. And this went on for a couple of days, and I thought, well, we're not going to have this. This is silly. A child being brought up like this to know us as this particular manner. So I said to my colleagues, right, I'll deal with her when she comes tomorrow. And so, true enough, tomorrow came, and stamping up the stairs in this military step came, and the girl came up with her bag, out comes her arm, and presents the bag with the eggs and things in it, and and I took it off her and went back into the dispensary, emptied it, put a bar of chocolate in it, and took it back to her without her saying anything, and she took it and turned round, she went downstairs. And that was that. The next morning, a very light-hearted, tripping up the stairs came this little girl. she, with a big smile, handed over the bag in a very sort of girlish sort of way and another block of chocolate went into the bag. The next morning, she brought her brother. And so that was the end. So we christened this girl Fratina. And so... Fratina. It was for non-frat time, and so we had broken it, obviously, with this girl. And she was only about 9 or 10 years old, I think. And so we had no conversation with her, but she always was... She tripped up the stairs in a delightful way after that, expecting, obviously, to take away something in return for her kindness of bringing up the eggs. So that was that, and we eventually, the company returned, and the whole unit was reassembled, and we made our move again. And we were sent off to Lüneburg. And Lüneburg, of course, was quite a large town. And it was very interesting. So we were there during the winter time. And it was quite interesting. We had a little cottage hospital, and that was the first time in the field, we came across the Queen Alexander's nursing personnel. We knew of her, and some of us did anyway, because I knew of the nursing sisters, because in our training we had served with them and trained under them. Just up the road was the 94th General Field, General Field Hospital, and that meant that we became under the jurisdiction of this matron of the hospital, the General Hospital, and this dear lady used to come down and make her inspections of our cottage hospital. And we were only just taking minor cases of div sick, really, and things like just coughs and colds or whatever, and nothing very serious. If there was serious, they were immediately sent up to the 94th General. And so, really, we became subservient to the General Hospital under their jurisdiction. We ourselves were billeted in a place called the Offizierenheim in, I think it was Julianerstrasse. And there we understood that some of the hierarchy of the German army had been staying, billeted, and I believe that one or two notable people were ended their lives there because of suicide. People like Göring or whatever, those sort of people. However, whilst we were, then we went down to another larger school in the centre of even Lüneburg, and that was at the time when the 94th General moved to Hamburg, and also it was the time when I was asked to set up a VD clinic and to go at Lüneburg. The 94th General moved to Hamburg, but we stayed in Lüneburg. And, of course, we had no real equipment to deal with the these sort of cases. And so before the